Well, I think the basic thrust of that italicized passage is the Son. I don't know if we need to go into each detail or not.
There's one.
Yeah.
There's one sentence that I think really explains what you were saying, that just because you have consciousness, it doesn't mean that you have meaning. And that is right after it says 19 and 20. There,
yeah.
If you go down 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 lines.
Yeah.
But his hand does not know where it should reach in all this indescribable.
Yeah. That's wonderful,
that.
Yeah.
I think that just shows that he's in this abundant place and he doesn't know what to do with what he's got.
Do you think he's talking about more than the ego here, but the logos aspect of the Son?
This is just my opinion. I think he hasn't distinguished between the logos as consciousness and the logos as spirit at this moment.
Even though he's talking about it coming down from
et
cetera, et cetera?
Right.
Well, he certainly does write meaningfully about it without understanding it then.
Well, you see, that's what the Anchorite does.
Well, yes, the Anchorite.
But
Jung puts the whole thing together amazingly if he's not understanding it, you know, by pointing out the problem with the Anchorite attitude and all of these aspects.
But remember, the Anchorite is him, so he's talking to himself about his own lack of understanding.
Well, that's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
He does an amazing job of it.
Well, and the
if
fact
he's not conscious of it.
The fact that, I mean, I think this is the problem with active imagination, that you interpret what you hear from the inner voices from the point of view of the inner voices. And it's darn hard to get an objective standpoint to the inner figures. But Jung is able to do that.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I find so amazing.
Right.
In other words, the animal might say, well, so-and-so is a jerk. And you think, well, yeah, so-and-so is a jerk. And you can't step back and say, wait a minute, anima, that's your opinion. You become identified with the voice. I think that's the danger of active imagination. And he is able to avoid doing that. It could be, like you guys said, that he's got somebody to talk to. I think that's why we talk about this stuff in the analytic work. So whether he's doing that on his own or whether he's got input, I don't know. But I think it is amazing. And what allowed him to succeed where others have crashed. Always remember that bumper sticker. Don't believe everything you think.
You know, sometimes when you, at least I experience this, like, you know, when you start to write something and all of a sudden it's like your pen is doing it. I mean, it's like you might not understand it, but I don't think I do either.
Yep.
This whole thing about the desert and, you know, it reminded me of the painting on the desert and the...
Me too. Yes, and you know, all the elements are there. You know, the ripened fruit, which is the pregnant figure with, and you know, the red rocks and the sun holding their heat, but yet there's an element that he doesn't have, which is the moon providing water.
Yeah,
so that's
the
water is from the fruit here, but yeah, it doesn't have a. Well, she has the, but see, that moon is what fills her. She has water too, and that moon, you know, the water surrounding the pregnancy, but that is coming. It trickles down from the moon into her. So that's, and you know, where is that? Where does the water of his fruits come from? That's something that isn't addressed in his desert scene. You know, where does the water come from for this garden? And it's as though the painting answers that question and says, well, that water is coming from the moon, or this feminine aspect.
And then the man was trapped in the dirt, right?
Right. That's right.
In the dryness.
The old logos from above, so to speak. Or you know, Christ with the Anthropos is down below. The old God image
has come down.
Mm-hmm. or the water has left its riverbed, so to speak.
Just a quick response to your comments, Gail. No, we'll come back to it. But look ahead to give you an idea why I said what I said, and I certainly admit this is an interpretation on my part. 271, about two-thirds of the way down on the second column, I, but it was a heathen prayer to Helios. That's why I'm saying that he's hoping that this will be the spirit, but now he's realizing, but this is Helios, this is not Christ. And it's not the Holy Spirit, and there's a difference. And the anchorite reinforces his blindness here. Let that suffice for you. And Jung is pretty soon going to say, anchorite, no. So it's in my mind like he's trying to take Freudian psychology and turn it into a theology. Consciousness as the the meaning of life. Later, what he's going to say is consciousness of the spirit is the meaning of life. But consciousness itself isn't. And that's what the sun would represent. And that's Freud.
Oh, I didn't mean that much about
Helios. Oh, he's just the sun. He's the sun god. He drives the sun across the heavens in a chariot.
So that represents consciousness?
Sun typically represents consciousness. You know, think of the idiom, I see. It takes light to see. And where does light come from? Primarily the sun. So that's why I said what I said, based on that.
That's amazing, his last line on 269, when it says, you sleep down for 1,000 solar years, and you wake up for the 1,000 solar years. And you're doing full of ancient. You know, it's like those layers, those different layers he's always talking about, and our ancestors.
Well, it's interesting that he contemplates the sun through a grave. Mm-hmm. No reason to lie in a grave when he's in the office. So he's thinking about the history of consciousness in a way.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Exactly. And, yeah, I forgot that he was in a grave.
Just above 20, 21, it says you lie down in the ancient graves whose walls are
right.
With many voices and many colors of thousands of stories. So he goes into the grave, and the dates and the black bread are there to sustain him. The anchorite puts him into their mm-hmm. grave, your place for the night.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I would say the ancient grave is the spiritual dilemma that he's trying to solve.
The ancient grave?
That stuff is dead. He's going to resuscitate it, but it no longer is what it once meant. And that's what he's having to face.
He has to go down into it in order to bring back the essence.
Bring back the essence and to feel that it's dead. So he feels dead.
Mm-hmm. He has to, in a way, he's experiencing that evolution all over again.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, neither do I. So, the people are listening. So.
I'm just thinking of how death gives your life meaning. Sometimes, where you contemplate your own death, what's important to you, but it also makes your life feel meaningless because if there's nothing beyond it.
Another detail, the Summa, page 270. You sit and lean against the wall and look at the beautiful, riddlesome totality. The Summa lies before you like a book, and an unspeakable greed seizes you to devour it. You are completely incapable of grasping it. Now the author, the editor says the Summa is Latin for whole.
Whole.
But,
it also means all.
Okay. I wondered if it wasn't a reference to the Summa Theologica, Thomas Aquinas' main work. When theologians talk about the Summa, they mean Aquinas. Aquinas is the theologian philosopher of the Church, Catholic Church. So I didn't know whether he was saying there, oh boy, wouldn't it be great if this theology could satisfy all my problems? And realizing, no, it won't. Because then he goes into writing and how useless writing is.
It's as though he's explaining to us the value of looking at things from this distance in the desert, and then saying, well, that's all well and good, but here's what happens if you only do that.
Right. Right. Yeah, and if you wanted to go with the personalistic aspect, this would be his trying to go back to his dad's worldview and see, is there some way I can find my place in it? In theology? And the answer is no.
So when he's talking about words, are these the old words that he's devaluing, like he says, and yet you cannot find the new words if you don't shatter the old words?
Let's look at some of those passages and then try to figure that out. For me, it's, I'm not sure. The writing lies before you and always says the same, if you believe in words. But if you believe in things in whose places only words stand, you never come to the end. And yet you must go, an endless road, since life flows not only down a finite path, but also an infinite one. But the unbounded makes you anxious, since the unbounded is fearful, and humanity rebels against it. What I get him saying here is there are words and there are words. And the danger is that the words substitute for the experience, but words can also express and convey experience. Make sure that you know the difference, he's saying to himself, I believe. A little further down, you cry out for the word which has one meaning and no other, so that you escape boundless ambiguity. That would be the word of the Christian message, which is simplistic. Or taken simplistically. Let's put it that way. Taken simplistically.
Again, the value of the word and the problems with the word.
Right. The word is protective magic against the daimons of the unending. If you need protection, that's a good thing. If you want to become a pioneer, it's not a good thing. He who breaks the walls of words, Siran, overthrows gods and defiles temples. The solitary is a murderer. He murders the people because he thus thinks and thereby breaks down ancient sacred walls, meaning the old meaning of the words. He calls up the daimons. Remember, daimon is the Greek word for demon, but it doesn't necessarily mean negative. It just means overpowering. If you're weak, it's negative. And he leans back, and does not hear the groans of mankind, whom the fearful fiery smoke has seized. And yet you cannot find the new words if you do not shatter the old words. But no one should shatter the old words unless he finds the new word that is a firm rampart against the limitless and grasps more life in it than the old word. A new word is a new god for old men. So as I get it, the new Jung is saying, I can't find meaning in the old Christian words anymore. But if I'm going to overthrow them, I better come up with something better. And I think that is symbolism. The word that he resuscitates is symbolic. And you say, isn't that what religion is? Yeah. So you could say, I have to go back to the real source of religion.
Process theology.
Current?
I just said process theology.
Is it?
That's right. You see, God is not the same as he was.
I see.
Thinking of it as a little bit of a critique of what had
happened
with him and maybe with the world too, that you cannot grow out religion until you have another thing to deal with that.
Right. Absolutely.
But is that chaos really avoidable, I wonder?
As a period, no, but as a condition, I think he's saying, yeah.
As a permanent condition.
As a permanent condition. Yeah.
Process theology is, and I wish I could remember the name I brought the book to you once. Anyhow, it's where God changes with the people, which I think that he could handle here.
Sounds very similar. Now he confuses me again. At the bottom, very last line on the first column. And thus the word should become what the darkness can comprehend. Since what use is the light if the darkness does not comprehend it? But your darkness should grasp the light. Anyone want to try to explain that? I'm not sure I understand.
Weren't we talking about the word as logos in the beginning when we read John? I'm not sure I understand this, but I'm trying to relate it to that logos is the light in the darkness. Is that what he's saying?
Well, they also relate Sophia. They identify Sophia with the logos.
Mm-hmm.
And
the
like
light,
that light in darkness.
Right. Yeah.
So maybe he's hinting at something like that. From above and below.
Okay, well,
or the opposites. What is he talking
about? Oh, excuse me.
The opposites that aren't too far apart, or the.
What I got out of it was the unconscious that comes to you has to be close enough to you that you can comprehend it. And then once you've comprehended that, you have to go a little further. And the other thing I got out of it was that he could no longer comprehend the old God image, so he had to comprehend the new God image that would work for him.
That's for sure. Where I am stuck a little bit, I think that darkness here refers to despair. Misfortune. depression, hopelessness, frustration, disappointment. No longer, it's a horrible story, but it's true. I saw one of my French classmates from years ago, and she had just lost a child to SIDS. Talk about black. That's darkness. How do you comprehend that? That's how you do it. She said, I'm just barely making it. Somehow what he's trying to get at is, I in general, but I don't know in specific, the relationship between meaninglessness and meaning, absurdity and meaning. Meaninglessness would be the darkness. What is meaningful about a 3-month-old child's death? And how do you not let that destroy you? And can you even, I know it's a horrible thing to say, but grow through it? And so that I think what he's trying to get at in general is we've got to develop a point of view that can deal with this stuff. What good is, you know, and the woman is actually a Hindu. And she said, well, God must know what he's doing. I didn't say anything. I wanted to say bullshit. Obviously, that's not helping her.
Yeah, let's try.
But you can see how that's a light that can't understand the darkness. So I don't know what the answer is. It's easier to say what the answer isn't. And the answer isn't, how do we develop a worldview that can't deal with tragedy?
Well, very, very soon this is going to be needed to the utmost.
Right, exactly.
With the wars.
Exactly, right. The war would be the big darkness, too. So, you know, maybe that's best to leave it vague, because that's about all I can get out of it. You can form your own opinion as you like. But what he's come up to in dealing with the anchorite is, anchorite, you got some nice thoughts, but how does that help us understand Auschwitz? Basically, putting it very simply. And I've got to develop a point of view that does help victims of Auschwitz, does help mothers whose children have died, does help victims of rape, and so on. Our psychology must come to terms with this stuff, and we simply can't say the universe makes sense to people for whom it doesn't make sense.
So this is like the beginning of his answer.
Exactly, that's what I think, yeah. That out of these questions, he kept that question alive for 30 years, 30 some years, and then we came to it in answer to Job.
I'm just wondering, right before class we were talking about being recovering Catholics, and my experience of that was that at first I went to atheism, and then I came back to whatever that middle was for me. But was he not doing the same thing with Christianity, and then with Freud and his age?
Mm-hmm. I think so, yeah.
And now he's at the third place.
I think so, absolutely, yep.
Yeah. Okay.
And here he's saying, well, you know, boy, I can't give up the spirit. Sure, it would be nice if I could live there. Mm-hmm. Well, I can't give up, but I can't live there either, because it doesn't help me understand how to help people who have been the victims of evil.
And you would have thought, you would have seen a lot of that having worked in the same asylum.
Right, right. So, again, why I'm saying that, because the next sentence, the God of words is cold and dead. But the word returned to its creator, to man, and thus the word will be heightened in man. And
it's a little confusing.
Well, the whole thing is confusing to me. I'll tell you just what I make of it the best I can. Is the word here would be our way of understanding.
Not the capital W word.
Correct.
Okay.
The way by which we frame and understand things has got to go through a transformation, would be my paraphrase of that sentence.
Use word with a capital W prior to this.
Well, the problem would be in German, all nouns are capitalized.
Yeah, right. So they wouldn't know.
So we wouldn't know.
But that some of the things that he quotes are definitely from the Bible.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But it says, let the word return to its creator, to man.
Mm-hmm.
So the word that is the word would not be created by man.
It's a puzzle.
Right.
I think we can get depressed trying to figure the thing out exactly. So
we'll need a new symbolism.
But that's really the meaning of that paragraph. We'll need a new symbolism. That's exactly what I think what he's saying. And the other detail which is so confusing here is the darkness comprehends, as if that has an understanding. I don't think it always does, but certainly I think at times we are put in horrible situations and something comes out of it that was necessary for the continuation of our life. And it's as if the tragedy knew what we needed to move forward. So that he's saying evil and darkness also have a mind. It appears at certain times. Again, that it's not good and evil, but evil can move forward in showing us something valuable.
So would you see evil as an archetype then? Evil and darkness?
Yeah. Yeah. I think you could say that. Yeah.
So wouldn't that be sort of like teaching children you're going to have bad things as well as good?
Yeah. And something of value might come out of the bad. Mm-hmm. But I don't think anyone would prepare a child to lose it, to lose their own first child. See what I'm saying? then the apparent injustice of the world just hits you over the head. Let's say at least we can conclude that he's saying that darkness and understanding must have some relationship to each other. Maybe the darkness understands things, and we certainly must understand how to deal with our dark aspects of our life. And that the worldview I'm trying to create has to take this into account. That I think I can say with some confidence. I think that does it too. DS2.
Not that, it's interesting. Darkness is your mother.
people who use reverence think the money is dangerous.
On the darkness as the light, and you illuminate your darkness. Is that what you're driving at? Yeah.
Don't want the two sentences before that.
Oh.
Mother, in the darkness is your mother.
Right.
And more people, I just got a book from Patty about the Black Madonna, but more and more people are apparently having dreams about the Black Madonna.
Yeah, she'd be the image that symbolizes this very fact.
Mm-hmm. And the picture of the little icon that I have of the Black Madonna, her cheek is scarred and she has the tears coming down. And apparently in Europe they've had this myth of the Black Madonna.
Yeah, there's one right outside of Zurich.
Mm-hmm. There's one in Florida, France.
There was one in Einsiedel.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's interesting, the old one, the first one they had was like 2 years or something. And over the years it got dirty and turned dark. And they have this back of this one. The new one is all gold and fancy, you know, it just kind of disgusting. But the living through the dirt of the time and ages is what made her look like now. Mm-hmm.
Candle smoke.
Well, there's all kinds of, I think, theories about her, but I think there's a deep one that can't
for me, anyway.
Yeah.
This is the beginning of the, it seems like, his new relationship with the feminine. I mean, he had his own mother, right? She was more powerful.
Mm-hmm.
Of the parental forces in his life. And, so in some way, maybe through time, Rolf, he's finding, and that whole relationship with him, and he's finding another, he's seeing that the feminine might be part of the answer.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you could say, if you use imagistic language, that he's really stumbling onto the Black Madonna here. Because she is that darkness which is not meaningless. She's the lack of meaning which isn't meaningless. The sorrow which is meaningful.
And I think the jeweling and decorating of her in European countries stands for, you know, I don't know if they understand it, but symbolically that they're honoring,
mm-hmm,
that she
is. Yeah, oh, definitely.
She is a queen.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that last sentence there, before the last paragraph, before Theus, honor the darkness as the light, and you will illuminate your darkness. Mm-hmm. So, in other words, in a depression or in despair, the great danger is that we flee from it and try to cheer ourselves up prematurely or go buy something or, you know, whatever. But to live it and let the dreams symbolize it is what Jung, I think, eventually came to as the solution to this problem. If you can hold it and not repress it, the dreams will speak to you through it. But it's also dangerous because you could jump off a bridge. So on the third line there, on the last paragraph before Dias, begin to comprehend the darkness. To me, that's the point of all this darkness talk. It's not just something we can't understand, and it's not something to be pacified with a theological cliché.
Could we say that, I'm sorry, go ahead. And could we say that the darkness is also our unconsciousness, what we do not know?
Yep.
And that isn't necessarily evil.
Right.
It's just unknown, and we might fear the unknown, but if you come to know it and make it more conscious, then that's the light in it.
Yeah, also.
Because I guess I have a problem with saying darkness is evil, because I felt like we were going in that direction.
Well, I'd say it could be evil.
Okay.
I mean, anywhere from despair to tragedy.
Okay.
That's symbolic of evil.
Mm-hmm.
I was thinking it's sort of like a maturity, too, because little children are afraid of the dark, or afraid under the bed, and all that stuff. And now they've got acquainted with this. They become very brave in the dark.
Okay, well, move on to the picture. I'm all ears.
I guess I felt like when I saw this, it explained the dilemma of making what is low, high,
mm-hmm.
and high, low. And you see the scarab there as the image of rebirth,
mm-hmm.
out of pushing his little ball of dung there, that rotates to the left. It looks to me like it rotates to the left, the way those little arms are.
Oh.
To the right. Oh, because it's flipped, sorry. I guess it looks to me like it rotates counterclockwise. That's just my feeling on it. Carol always seems surprised to explain that.
Well, just because when Jung describes a shape like that, it's like the little thing coming off as a jet, and it's pushing
on. Okay.
But that's just the way he describes it.
Okay. See, then you have the
crucifixion. Yeah, the jet's going this way.
Okay. So then I felt like the crucifixion with the snake is the thonic experience of crucifixion, and then look how small then the scarab gets when it meets spirit. I just was moved by that.
Mm-hmm.
And then the reverse happens on the other side, and I felt that orangey thing was then the sun is brought down to earth.
Yeah, the whole picture is what he's been talking about, the logos from above,
mm-hmm.
and the logos coming up from below. That's the idea that strikes me.
It's interesting that they cross the reverse here, too.
Mm-hmm. And then the little ball of dung then penetrates the sun, where before we had in that cave the dark snakes penetrating the sun when Siegfried is killed, when the hero is killed. Now you have this dung, ball of dung has now the center of the sun.
Now what was that mean? What was that mean?
That's what the scarab pushes in the desert. And he lays his eggs in there, isn't that correct?
Yes. Yeah. Yeah, I think the scarab will seek out dung from cows or whatever and roll its eggs up in it. And, of course, in Egypt, this is an Egyptian image. They didn't know about eggs and stuff like that. They didn't have microscopes. So all they saw was this beetle gets a piece of dung, and out it comes another beetle. So it was really transformation through crap. That's the lore around it. And I can show you just here. See? It was the head of the sun god.
And that winged orb is symbolic of the solar energy, the solar god.
Oh, where's that?
Back to your previous screen. The winged orb?
Here, oh yeah.
That's an Egyptian, and well, Zoroastrian, too.
Uh-huh.
And, what's that other group? It escapes me now. But that's the solar energy, the logos, that he's talked about coming. Mm-hmm. See, on one side it's going up, on the left.
Yeah.
And then you know, on the right side it's going down. Yeah. And the snake on the cross shows us that.
Absolutely. Good work, yes.
And it seems to me, now this, I've been talking about this new abstraction.
Mm-hmm.
And here, I see his beginning attempt at a living abstraction.
Mm-hmm. To bring it into the whole.
Yeah, because look down below. He's got all of these, in the earth, he's got all of these living abstracted figures beginning. You know, on the right, he's got this sort of beast. And then he's got a man with a knife. He seems to be next to sort of a scarab kind of figure. Then on the far
left. You want to point it here? You want to point it out?
Mm-hmm. So,
there would be the scarab.
It appears to be a man. And there's a man in the center here. There's his knife.
Mm-hmm. He's repeated.
And then here he is with a sword. You know, as though there's some sort of discrimination. Beginning. And it's as though the earth itself is becoming animated by logos. And that cross with the circle in it is the astrological symbol for earth. And here it's like there's a circulation.
Definitely.
Yeah, to me it seems on the left that he's deifying, you know, the scarab goes up into
right,
becomes
but
deified, the deified
bringing up the logos,
of the ego,
and then bringing it down. And then he talks all about this. He explains this whole image,
which is like the tree is rooted
above and below.
Mm-hmm. And the winged disc was in the Egyptian tradition. Is the sun god who transforms into the scarab.
Uh-huh. Yeah. See, he's being carried on his boat across the sky.
On the right side of that previous picture, there are the five palm trees, as opposed to four on the first one. Mm. Is that like there's another expression or something.
Bringing it into the body or...
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and above, all of the abstract shapes, you know, have no relation to reality, so to speak. But here, mm-hmm. in the earth, mm-hmm. the abstract is related to reality because he's thinking it forms.
Oh, I see. Uh-huh.
I see two that aren't so abstract. To me, this is a fish.
Yeah, I saw that too.
Mm-hmm. And up there is like a lamp.
Yeah, the fish is the only one that really struck me. It's a dead fish, but it's got bones.
Yeah.
That's the old logos, I think, Christian one. It's got no meat on its bones anymore.
Mm-hmm. Well,
so it's totally gone into, it's going into abstraction. It's like it's losing itself.
The colors are inverted too, from the center part and the top part.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe a body moving too.
Yeah, the higher you go,
the cooler it gets,
more abstract.
Good work. Well, should we stop for today? We'll pick up with this next time. We got as far as DS 2, and I think I had to read through 273. Huh? I had to read further than that?
Yeah, you do.
Yeah.
Oh, to 273? Oh, good. I don't think we'll get...
and you skip next week, right?
Oh, gosh, yeah. 2 weeks, we won't be meeting. Right. So it'll be 4 weeks. Carl, would you mind telling the folks we won't be here in 2 weeks?
Mm-hmm.
No, just the church. And and we're going to put one more at the end of 1st of June. Did I give you that date? As a matter of fact.
The date is for 2 weeks from now?
Yeah, hang on.
The 17th?
I just happen to have.
March 17th.
Oh, that's right.
Karen, we won't meet.
Okay.
Karen, here's a sheet for you. We won't be meeting the 17th.
Yeah.
I kind of cooped up my schedule, and I have to be out of town. It really wasn't my idea. And so we put one on June 2nd, and we'll make those who paid ahead will carry it over to the fall.
Oh.
We missed one snow. We'll miss next time. Does that make sense, Colin?
No, sure.
Okay.
For a month
or so,
like,
or however long you need it.
Friends of Young.
Friends of Young, probably.
If I need it, I'll call it.
Okay, thank you. And we'll see you in the month.
Okay.